And with a quick turn, skipper Alex Dock slams it in.
Here's Lindegaard making Forrest back pedal. Davis looking to help it into the path of Morris. He's found him via the deflection. It's Aaron Davis. He could win it. He probably has won it for Yeovil.
Oh, and it's an opening goal. What a start. Madden, after just 6 minutes, gives Yeovil the lead.
Stansfield, good turn away from Trott. Goal!
Hello and welcome to the Glovers Cast, the only podcast dedicated to the tabletoppers who need three more wins to be crowned champions of a National League South, other results depending. I'm Ian, Ben's here. Ben, say hello.
Hello.
And the jinx-free county railer, David Coates, returns from his trip to Essex. Say hello, Dave.
Hello, Dave. Back-to-back back wins. What more can I say?
You've got a great record, Dave.
Back-to-back victories, you'll never sing that.
Yeah. That's better than the actual Yeovil team.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
It was Dave what won it.
Yeah.
So it had been four matches without wins, without a win before Saturday's visit. And it felt like this was a little bit of a must win, even more so with what happened everywhere else on the day. We all took this match in a little bit differently, didn't we? I had the tones of Sheridan and Ollie on BBC Somerset. Yep. Ben, you were on the stream.
I was on the stream silently, and depending on how many of my employers are listening, with varying degrees of attention being paid.
Dave, obviously you were there. Tell us about the Rare Breed Meat Company Arena. Although I'm not sure it was called that, based on some of the signs I've seen on HP Source. And it wasn't referred to that once on commentary, I must say.
I have to say, I did not see a single sign for any Rare Breed meats. There were a few rare breeds of various things in Braintree and at Cressing Road, shall we call it. But there was certainly a rare breed of cider, but we can come on to that maybe.
There was a quick shout out for Ollie Marsh's picture that he sent to us in our little group chat. There was an advertisement for Visit Kenya. Have you been decided to go to Kenya off the back of your...
I mean, I felt inspired, I have to say. Yeah, yeah. It's the kind of place that really does inspire you to travel to anywhere that's a very long way from Braintree, I think. Yeah, Kenya seems far enough. Nairobi, here I come.
First class to Nairobi, here we go. Let's go.
I mean, some of the... Tell us a little bit about the surroundings, Dave. I mean, some of the footage from behind the terrace.
Yeah.
a little bit Fallout Wasteland kind of territory.
It was a little bit of a nuclear post-apocalyptic scene at one point. What I will say is where you get off the train there, at Braintree Freeport, if anyone fancies going outlet clothes shopping, it looks very nice. And judging by the number of bags that were on the train back into London, I'm going to say there's quite a good selection there. So I would advise going to Braintree for that. I would not advise going to Cressing Road, as I think it was called. I mean, someone was telling me that it was when Bristol Rovers were down in the conference, however many years ago that was. They lost on the opening day of the season there. And I can only imagine how many of their heads exploded and how many people rang Jeff Twentyman after that, because losing at that place is the most non-league of non-league things you could possibly wish to imagine. It was a sort of small grandstand, which is where Sheridan and Ollie were, fairly crumbly concrete on the way round. Jimmy Smith was there, spotted Jimmy Smith in the crowd. Behind the away end was what can only be described as a wasteland with a collection of what appeared to be quite a lot of vending machines in there, I think, in various states of decomposition. And I think there was a bath in there as well. So, yeah, it was a strange place. We did sing Scrapyard Away, LA, LA a couple of times, which I don't think they really got. But yeah, but there was a decent crowd in, obviously, because it was non-league day, so I think they might have benefited from some Colchester fans I saw there and a few West Ham fans. And as we were walking in, walked past a little marquee that they'd had set up, and I thought, I recognise that voice. Why do I recognise that voice? And then as I was coming out, queuing for the toilets, was Martin Allen, the multiple MK Dons manager. Yeah. And I thought, that's the voice. I knew I recognised that voice from some Mad Dog. Yeah. Yeah, wow. He was queuing for the toilets as well.
Wow. How was the organisation of it all? Because without wishing to get all sort of on our high horse about it, no segregation. Oh, no, wait, no, we better do some segregation. Yeah. You can't buy tickets beforehand. Oh, no, wait, hang on, we better sell some tickets beforehand. But Yeovil fans can't. Go through these 1-2 turnstiles, please. Thank you. Yeah. Cheers, bye.
To be fair, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was. If there'd been a bigger away following, and I think the size of the away following was probably partly down to the fact that nobody really had a clue what was going on before they turned up. But I'm going to guess there was 250, 300 people there. I turned up early thinking there was going to be a queue, and there wasn't. We wandered in quite easily. But yeah, it was, yeah. Their Twitter account uses a hashtag pub team from Essex, and I think they're about right there, I think. Yeah.
Well,
so, and I'm not rushing to go back. Let's put it that way.
No.
Well, fingers crossed, they won't come up with us.
No. They won't, because they bottle their big days, is what happens.
Well, that's you've segued there nicely, Ben. You've been quite happy to tell us in the WhatsApp all weekend. Correct. How you were right.
Yep.
On the last episode. So, what did you see that made?
Success has many parents, doesn't it? The amount of people who are just queuing up to claim this, it's yeah, it's quite impressive. Sorry, Ben, carry on.
I think I did it. I simply pointed out that they hadn't beaten anybody properly. They hadn't beaten a proper team properly. The last time someone turned up in a big occasion, Chelmsford beat them. They've struggled in big game playoff games. They failed to get over the line on a number of different occasions. Angelo Harrop said pre-match he wanted them to embrace the big occasion. You don't say that if you've got a squad that embraces the big occasion every single darn time. They were bottle jobs. It just felt like it from the minute one. And I used the phrase immediately afterwards. I said it to people who cared not but a jot in the studio at work, but also to you guys on the WhatsApp chat. I said that was a big boy win. We had to show that we were the big boys. We had to go there, strap our big boy pants on, go large on the coffee on the way in. Big boy cups of coffee, big boy performances all throughout the team. And it was, we're the bigger team and you need to understand that. Yeah, you've been on a run, but you haven't actually done anything of note. And we're here to show you that. And we did. And I genuinely think it's difficult to call a 1-0 win a statement win. But I was watching it thinking, every one of them standing up here. Every one of them, because they do have good players, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you they don't. But it was a performance where throughout the group, everyone got what they were being asked to do, everyone got the situation they were in, and they just got their battles done. It was a genuine pleasure to watch. I haven't seen a lot of these games this season via different means. That was one of my favourite wins that I've personally seen this season. Genuinely enjoyed it from start to finish.
I think Frank Nuble after the match said that they needed to show teams that Yeovil are a level above, were his words. Dave, did that come through when you were there, when you were watching?
I was actually a little bit nervous going into it because of the form. And I know what Ben was saying about they haven't beaten a proper team a proper way, but any team that hasn't lost since January the 1st through until the 23rd of March, you've got to give some kind of, put some respect on that. So I was a little bit nervous, but within about 5 or 10 minutes of us kicking off, I thought, yeah, this isn't going to be the Braintree that the stats would suggest they are. And they do have good players, and they've got some experienced players in there as well, which they had Freddie Sears up front, who I think has played over 500 Football League games. So they had is it Colthurst as well, the other striker that they had up front, who's been around a bit. So they've got players who will have played in far bigger games than this one. But no, I felt that it was one where we just controlled it the whole time. And even though in the second half, because it's me and because I'm constantly, you know, convinced that happiness is never going to find me again. I was
very quickly.
I was very panicky, particularly in the second half. But watching back the highlights, there was no need to be panicky, I don't think.
Nope.
No, because everything that they did was sort of in the middle of the park. Oh, they had quite a lot of the ball. They did see quite a lot of possession, but every time they got into a position, they messed it up. They put it over the bar. They put it straight into Joe Day's arms.
Yeah.
Which that chance, I don't know. It didn't look as good a chance on the highlights. But about two minutes after we scored, I think it was Colthurst had a header into the box, and he looked a lot freer from watching him down the other end of the pitch where we were, but he just headed it straight at Joe Day. Now, that was a big chance, I thought. That was probably the only meaningful effort that they created all day.
It was the only shot on target they registered when I did the little... what I liked was, and I don't know how this came across on the radio, actually, Ian, because obviously I wasn't listening in any way, shape or form. The first of everything went our way. The first cross of theirs, Joe Day came and got. The first time Jake Wandle had a one-on-one in the air, he won it. The first time Morgan Williams battled for the ball, he won it. The first 50-50 challenge that Charlie Cooper went in for, he won it. The first time we had a set piece, we scored from it. The first of everything, we set our stall out very, very early. And it was like we had decided as a group that that start of the game would set the tempo for this entire thing. And I just really, really liked that first 15 minutes. It would have been absolutely fine if we'd have said, you're the home team, you're going to have the ball, it's your big day, your big crowd, we'll just soak it up for 10 minutes. We'll just take our foot off the gas, it's fine, we'll work our way into this game. Completely the opposite. We went in, Genesini putting a tackle down on the right-back area, big moment. Jay Folson had one down the left-hand side where he just rosetted the damn thing and just went, I'm not mucking about here. We did not give them anything in all of those individual little first moments. And it was really, really noticeable. And I wonder if it was a real prominent part of that pre-match thought of give them hell for 15 minutes and they won't know what's in them.
Yeah. I think it sounded, it came across that way. I think the only thing was Freddie Sears, as you've mentioned, Dave, they sort of referred to him quite a lot, but yeah. It sounded like, yeah, we stepped up early and tried to take control. Attacking wise, it was another new sort of combination with a front four of Young, Nubley, Lowe Everton and Clark. How did they get on? I think it sounded like Clark put himself about, but wasn't particularly, what's the word I'm looking for? Well, he didn't get his chances to put away particularly.
No, he looked a bit lost, to be honest with you. I mean, he is a big old unit, a very big old unit. And it's harsh to judge him on what did he play an hour or something like that, but you could see that there was a player there because he's obviously got a good touch. And you can tell that he's, you know, there is a quality as you would expect from somebody who's come from an EFL academy. But yeah, he never really got a moment. He tried to nip in on the keeper on a couple of things. He seemed to do this thing where he tried to like swivel round his defender, and he did it about two or three times. And it just didn't work for him. And then he kind of, I wouldn't say he looked disinterested because he was always there. He was always in and around. But I'll be honest, I didn't really see anything from him that made me think, wow, this is a player. I was actually, when I saw that he was starting, I thought, oh, well, that's good, because obviously goals have been hard for us to come by. And I thought he could be the spark. And he wasn't the spark for us up front, but Frank Nuble 100% was the spark. He was, to my mind, he was everywhere. He was like, and when he got the ball, you weren't getting it off him.
It was different, wasn't it, from Nuble this game? It wasn't his usual, I've said before, haven't I, but he gets the ball and just head down, run, and you aren't stopping him. This was different. It was back to goal a little bit more. It was to his feet. It was to being strong and horrible and drawing a defender out of place to then try and go around a corner to Young, to try and go across back to the middle of the pitch. It was different from Nuble, but you're absolutely right. I thought he was immense. Just exactly what you need. And again, you talk about, I would love to know what that final few words in the pre-match was, but from that first 15 minutes, he looked like he was like, we are winning today. Try and stop us. Dare you. I absolutely dare you. I will get on the end of that corner. I will make sure we keep the ball for long periods of time. I will make sure that we have got everything we need to do. He just seemed to have that bit between his teeth. And is it hyperbole to say that when Frank Nuble has that bit between his teeth, I'm not sure there's many better who, or many comparable players to him at this level at all. There are different players. Ollie Pearce is a different player and scores different goals and the rest of it. When Frank Nuble has the bit between his teeth as a leader of an attacking unit, I think he's incomparable at this level. I really do.
You could say as a governor of an attacking unit.
I could, the words perfectly sum him up. And I just love that about it. I love that about him when he has one of those games where you just like, I feel so at ease knowing that he's part of my attacking unit. Even if we aren't scoring a million goals, it's fine.
And you wonder whether he felt like he maybe had something a bit to prove, because the last few games, obviously having seen a couple of them on the stream, he's looked a bit out of it and on the periphery of things during our recent stumbles.
He went through that spell of scoring, didn't he? Taunton game where he scores the one that we needed. Was it before that or after that as well? There was another one he scored, wasn't there, that it was sort of, yeah, big goals. And yeah, they have dried up a bit for him as well. So
yeah,
it felt like he needed it too.
Yeah, but the goal he scored was straight off the training ground, you could tell. Because you saw what he wanted to do from the minute that corner came in, because he was in exactly the right spot. And he perfection, you know, as flicked headers go, they don't get much better than that. And that keeper, as I'm sure we'll go on to discuss, he wasn't very tall as a goalkeeper. He had a bit of the Will Buses about him in that sense. And their entire defence wasn't very tall as well. And that's why I thought with Clark up front, we could maybe cause some problems, because every time something went into the box, they looked vulnerable. But Clark, he's one of those, for a man of his size, he didn't win a great deal in the air. You could tell that if we bullied them a bit, then we were going to get something. And once we got that goal, you just sort of saw them begin to, shoulders went down a little bit. Maybe the pressure of having a big crowd and it being a big game and all of that really did start to weigh heavier on them.
They got a bit moany, didn't they? They got a bit, goalkeeper comes out and has a run at the ref a couple of times, a couple of free kicks that they get given, and they don't worry about taking the free kick and trying to get the game going again. They want bookings. They want more. They're trying to make points to the referee. And I thought at times their style was a bit counterproductive. Like, you've got the free kick, get on with the game. You're in a good position here. You've stopped an attack. You've got a quick forward. Get the ball going. And they don't. And the keepers run 30 yards to have a moan at Alaino about an offside call. And you're like, hang on, what? I just didn't feel right the way they went about it. And it for me can only be a case of their big occasions probably got to them a little bit, got to them just a little tiny bit. Some clubs have done it expertly against us, and some clubs have done that, unfortunately. And that's not the way. It's not the way to beat us, as worse teams than Braintree have shown.
Yeah. one thing we do definitely have to put some respect on is the save from Jack Sims from Jordan. And when I saw it live, it looked like, you know, Gordon Banks against Pelé, kind of. Yeah, I don't think it was that good.
Seaman against Pesca Solido.
Well, absolutely. That's the other one, yeah. That immediately springs to mind. But and then when I saw it on their highlights, I thought, oh, maybe it was just a bit of a reaction. He literally just put his hands up and the ball comes off his hands. But then you see it on the from a different angle on the HP source and you think, no, he's actually reacted. I mean, it's pure instinct,
yeah.
But it's very good instinct.
I said in our chat, it's closer to Jerzy Dudek Champions League final against Andrei Shevchenko. Shevchenko scores, of course he scores, but Dudek just sticks up a hand in the way and it hits it. And that's all he's done there. It's not to the same level, but that is thousands of hours of reaction training coming to the fore. It's a heck of a save, a ridiculous save. And keeps his team in the game, really. And like you said, they never really felt like they were going to absolutely smash the door down. But at 1-0, there's always a chance of a worldie or of an absolute shocker or something. So at that moment, it's a vital, vital save. I've seen a few things about that keeper on social media pop up, and he's made a few team of the weeks when we've had Yeovil players in there and stuff. So clearly he's very highly thought of, but as an individual save, it's top, top draw.
I can't believe Yeovil Town versus Braintree in the National League South has been compared to AC Milan versus Liverpool in the Champions League final, but right. There we are. Yeah. There we are.
Yeah.
I don't remember that save from Dudek. That game's...
You don't remember that save from Dudek? That's right. The thing about the game I do remember.
Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure I could name the three Liverpool scorers. So, but I remember Dudek.
I'm not
save.
A Liverpool fan.
No, so. Well, either way. So. Yeah. But hey, there you go.
But
very,
should Jordan Young do better?
No, he's done everything right. That goes in. If he does it 1,000 more times, he scores 999 of them.
Can't you just nod it?
He's
he nods it back across goal,
air.
Doesn't he? He nods it back across goal.
That's where he's supposed to nod it, because everyone's going one way. So the idea of being able to shift all your weight the other way to get to the ball is ridiculous. Jordan Young's done nothing wrong there for me.
Let's stick with Jordan Young, because Mark Cooper said similar about Jordan Young, but did say that he'd lost his way a little bit and probably didn't work as hard. In previous games, I don't care who you are and what level you're at, you have to work your socks off and you watch the best teams, they sprint and run. And if you do that, then you start getting your breaks again. And Young, he did that today and he was outstanding.
Yeah.
So, so much digging out Jordan Young, but saying digging him out for some previous performances, which I think it's been a bit apparent that Jordan Young's not been the level that he has been previously. Dave, was it an improvement? From Youngie,
he was noticeably active, shall we say, and getting kicked up in the air a lot as well, which is always a sign that he's causing problems. You definitely noticed his effort. Whether he was the creative goal scoring threat that he was during that period where he was banging him in left, right, and centre, no, but if Mark Cooper's point is that he hasn't put in the effort in recent games, he definitely did on Saturday, I'd say. And you again, I've said that about Newblade today. There's a few of them in there that you saw them raise their levels a bit.
I tell you what I noticed. Mark Cooper said a couple of weeks ago about the running thing, didn't he? He said they're going to have to run more.
Yeah.
And there was two occasions that really stood out to me. One, quite early on, Genesini, he's trying to get on the end of a cross. Keeper comes and claims it. Fine, not a problem. Keeper bowls the ball out quite quickly. And you see it brilliantly in HP source because it's right in front of Dan, who's got the thing. He's just head down, gone, get back. And then he does it again. He's trying to whip a cross in. I think he gets a free kick given against him. Whether or not it is or not, I don't know. But his immediate thought is head down, get back. And on both occasions, by the time he gets back, Charlie Cooper has made up 30, 40 yards of his own to be stood at right back. And it just makes you think, actually, we're back to that point. And it probably hasn't been, to me anyway, and again, it might just be me because I haven't seen a lot of it, it hasn't been that obvious probably since the last time we played Braintree, right in the middle of that ridiculous run of, Christ, there's two people in every position every single time. So whether or not we just naturally, our fitness levels just dropped as the season goes on, and now we're finding a bit of a second wind to really go through, and a couple of extra pairs of legs, and a couple of people have had a couple of weeks off and things like that. Matt Worthington covered every blade of grass again. Jay Falston was at left back, hoiking a ball clear, and then 3.5 seconds later, he was trying to get a crossing on the left-hand side. It just felt like, it felt like that message had got through to me watching it. And like I say, I was watching in silence. I didn't hear anything. I was just watching the move, and I just thought a couple of times, they are putting in some yards because they feel like they need to.
Considering that we were without our first choice right back and left back, yeah. I didn't notice it. And I think Jay Falston's coming for a bit of stick, but I thought he was very good.
Yeah, I do.
I thought he had a good game, but Genesini really impressed me. I'd say he, like you say, he obviously got a lot of running power, and he's quick as well, and he can stick a tackle in. Yeah, he can stick a tackle in. He can stick a cross in as well. Yeah. I really like what I saw from him. But yeah, shout out for Jay Falston as well. Considering we all know the importance of Michael Smith and how reliable Alex Whittle's been, and obviously. Mm. We know we're not going to see Alex Whittle now for the rest of the season. And we don't know about Michael Smith, but they some on that performance. Admittedly, the Braintree wingers, were they really up to much? They didn't show an awful lot, but I think you've got to give credit to the players defending against them for that as well.
Yep.
There's a couple of questions, not too dissimilar from what we had last week around Genesini, but we've got an extra 90 minutes out of him. So almost a pro pilot. Should we be looking at signing Genesini when Smith retires? I think he's put Michael Smith out to pasture early doors.
I wouldn't do that too soon. Let me say this.
Also, Clevo wants to know, would you look at signing him on a personal basis, permanent basis? Maybe too soon, but been impressed with his performances in the first two games.
There is no way on the face of this earth that Brooklyn Genesini doesn't benefit from an entire season training and working alongside Michael Smith. No. If Brooklyn Genesini can soak up any of the experience of Michael Smith and become quarter of the right back, quarter of the fullback that Michael Smith has had and been in his career, it makes absolute complete sense to get Genesini back in some way, shape or form next season. Maybe on loan, if he does get released, absolutely. And that's with or without Michael Smith. Michael Smith might not be in a position to play the same number of games next season. So to have that rotation, it's something that we've needed this season. It didn't quite happen with Zach Bell, but we need a little bit of depth. And the ability to keep players happy is difficult, but the pair of them, Genesini could do a bit of what Falston does and play a bit of right wing and go and do another job somewhere for half hour and all the rest of it. So for me, absolutely. On that, I've only seen 90 minutes and he really impressed me in those 90 minutes.
Would not disagree with any of that.
Should we do some maths?
Let's do some maths.
Martin Lee. Martin Lee wants to know when the title will be secured. So for those who are planning their trips, planning their ticket purchases, when can we actually win it?
So, if we win the next three in a row, Torquay, Weymouth, Worthing, that's it. It's done. It's dusted. No one can get anywhere near us. It is that simple. We need 9 more points come hook or crook. Now, where it starts to get more complicated is what Chelmsford do. Chelmsford's current maximum is 91, hence why we are aiming for 92. Side note, that's 2 points per game, which has been the figure that's been banded about all damn season long, which is genius. Obviously, if Chelmsford were to drop points on Friday, their absolute maximum would be 3 points fewer, 88. We would only need to get to 89 to get the victory, which means if we were to win on Friday, Chelmsford were to lose on Friday, We could win it at Weymouth.
I have to say that was the cry that was going up when we thought Chelmsford had lost at Taunton. That's where everyone thought it was coming.
Yeah. Obviously, you flip that on its head. If we should fall, even if we draw against Torquay and Chelmsford win against Dartford on Friday, it then cannot be done at Worthing. It would roll over to Truro on the Thursday night. Unless we get into permutations on the Monday again. But basically, yeah, a 9-point swing is what we need. We either win 9 points or we win as many points as we can and Chelmsford drops some along the way. With the greatest of respect to Hampton and Richmond and Maidstone, who can both get to 88, really, it's Chelmsford's points, maximums points tally that we have to worry about for now.
And Chelmsford are playing Dartford on Friday, Dover on Monday, and then Slough Town.
I don't want to disappoint anybody. Chelmsford have what I would call the perfect run-in. They play two absolute relegation cannon fodder. I'm no good at geography, but Dartford, Chelmsford, bit of a derby? Or am I clutching at the proverbial straws there?
Dartford's Kent, isn't it?
Yeah, Dartford's Kent. It's
not
like...
Not really.
No, the other side of the M25.
That's a derby.
Fine.
And the other side of the River Thames as well.
So you've got two teams that are absolute cannon fodder, and then Slough, Tunbridge, Chippenham, who are, I think, 11th, 12th, and 13th. They are probably, well, if they're not already on the beach, they will be by the time those three games come around. I don't think it's unrealistic to say Chelmsford pick up 15 points. I listened to their manager after the Taunton game. He had a couple of interesting things to say. He said, you find out where you're finishing the league over the Easter weekend, which I thought was interesting. He said, teams will traditionally find out where they're going to finish over the Easter weekend. I think probably alluding to the fact that if we win both of our games over the Easter weekend, they ain't getting to us anyway. He also said that they've got a couple of players coming back from suspension, but they've lost a couple of key players. The captain went off injured at halftime for them, I think, in their game. So they have got some injury problems. But who hasn't? That, in a nutshell, is the maths. Should Chelmsford flunk a couple of games over the Easter weekend, there is a chance, and we flunk a couple of games over the Easter weekend, that's when Hampton and Richmond and Maidstone can come and get involved. The result from our game yesterday means that Braintree can only get 86 points, which we are only 3 points away from anyway. We're still the only team that can make 100. We can get to 101 if we are perfect between now and the end of the season. Feels a little bit unlikely maybe, but it is doable. And we are officially guaranteed a playoff place. That is absolutely set in stone. You cannot take that away from us. We will finish a minimum of 7th this season.
And I know you mentioned almost all our fixtures there, but am I right in saying our last two fixtures are Dartford at home and Dover away?
Yes. So we play the proverbial cannon fodder
Truro away is the one before Dartford.
Yes. So we've got
Truro, who will have played
Truro on
at least
Thursday.
48 hours earlier.
Yeah.
And then Dartford.
Maximum 48 hours earlier.
Yeah. I did have a nice little moment looking at the possible finishing positions table that's still mathematically possible. We're 1-7, so Truro, who are 19th, can still finish second, and Taunton, who are 20th, can still finish third.
No.
Officially, mathematically, realistically, no. Dover, I think Dover have gone. I'm not sure if it's been mentioned, but I don't think Dover can finish any higher than 21st.
Right.
I think they've gone. Have I missed like an announcement or like a declaration there? But according to Transfermarkt, Dover have gone. Havant can finish 14th, Eastbourne 11th, Dartford 10th in their... But according to this Transfermarkt, 21st to 24th for them. Unless maybe there's a massive goal difference swing or something. I don't know. But yeah, there you go. That is the thing.
Well, according to the match report that Dover put on their own website, it doesn't mention anything about them getting relegated. So
fair enough. I'm literally my source is transfer marked, so don't have a go at me.
Cool. There's the maths. Right. Couple of questions to fire through. Who do you think are getting relegated from League Two? This is from Almost a Pro Pilot.
One of Forest Green, Sutton and Colchester?
Grimsby in freefall as well. Grimsby just draw too many games. Draw way too many games. I think Grimsby are in trouble. Grimsby, if I'm not mistaken, have got a bit of a stinker of a run-in, including Colchester. Forest Green look the most likely to go, but they seem to blow hot and cold. They won a couple, lost a couple. So if they can string a couple of wins out of somewhere together, they might get out of it. I think Sutton might be the ones that definitely go. I think Grimsby are going to drop. Forest Green scrape out of it somehow.
Who's manager at Forest Green now? They always have an interesting
manager. Who knows? Who knows? I think pretty sure it's your turn next week.
Is it? Yeah. They always have a
it's Steve peculiar... Cottrell.
Oh, Steve Cottrell. Is that's it? Right. Yeah. So there you go. There's a man who's probably
might
done
get him
that.
Out of it.
Yeah. He's got the accent for it.
Exactly. Where else am I going here? Yeovil Goon and Mark says, hardly seen ours this season. Are we saving him for the running? I don't think so.
Yeah. I thought he came on Saturday, and then I realised it was actually Dylan Morgan. And I realised that these are, yeah, all of these sort of slightly curly-haired little midfield players are just interchangeable.
How are the eyes, Coates?
Eyes are actually good.
Yeah.
Ears, not so good, but eyes I'm usually pretty good with.
Okay,
yeah.
That's fine. Good.
Yeah. I do have to say I didn't have the benefit of a camera that panned in on the dugout, but I, you know, my eyes aren't that good.
No.
I haven't got my cyborg chip in yet.
Your AI.
Yeah, not activated.
Yeah, it's a weird one, Josh Hours, because he had that spell sort of, it was probably September, October-ish, maybe even into November, where when Charlie Cooper wasn't available and he and Worthy were really, really good. And I think it was Braintree when he came out. I'm sure it was the pink day.
Yeah,
he
could be right. Yeah.
That he didn't play and never really got back in again. But we'll always have that goal against Eastbourne, was
Dover,
it?
Wasn't it? Was it not Dover?
I want to say Eastbourne.
The one from the Perler into the top corner.
I thought that was Dover, but you could be right. You're probably right. It probably was Eastbourne.
Yeah. Yep. It's a shame.
Eastbourne. It is a shame. Look, we've got injury problems. We have got injury problems. We don't know truly how fit Charlie Cooper is. Matt Worthington runs a lot. So
he's bound to get injured soon.
I'm glad he's in and around the group still. I really, really am.
Yeah.
We're going to need, I think only Jordan Stevens was missing from the 16 of those who have been fit recently. We assume Dawes is done for the season. Smith, Whittle, we know that there are others that aren't going to play for us or have been out on loan or injured or whatever else. So I think it's only Jordan Stevens. And I don't recall anyone either asking about him or saying he's definitely injured. But he was there, right?
Yeah, he was there, yeah. And to the extent that it was only when I was on the train home that I thought, Jordan Stevens didn't even make the bench. And that maybe says something about the performance that... although I could have easily mixed Dylan Morgan up.
I was
going to
say, you sure you didn't think he was playing? Like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well done, Jordan! Everyone thought I was talking to Jordan Young, but yeah. Yeah.
Okay, we've got one from Sunlit Uplands, which we missed on Thursday.
Oh, apologies.
I didn't miss anything.
Well, I'm blaming Musk. What is the solution to the mystery of the falling home gates? Crowds falling when they should be rising. Marketing? Question mark. Style of football? Question mark. Now, I don't have the latest gates to date.
No.
They will have them on football web pages.
I mean, we haven't we, well we've lost our last two games, haven't we? We played Welling and Chippenham, who arguably don't bring huge crowds with them as well. I'm not sure if you could say that for some of the other higher gates that we've had, but
Yeah, so
yeah.
Chippenham 2838, Welling 3285. I mean, it's above three again. Weston-super-Mare 3390, Havant 3801. That was a Saturday. I mean, Tuesday 20th of Feb on a Tuesday night, we passed 3-3. I know it was Weston-super-Mare, and they might bring a few, but that's not bad. Slough on a Tuesday night nearly touched three. Hemel 3-5, Bath at home 5, Taunton 6-3 on Boxing Day. I mean, it's
When you
not
look
a
at when you look at
massive
the
amount of dwindling.
averages, the averages we're at 3.5 average for the season, and Torquay are at 2,300 for the season. So, I mean, we're more than 1,000,
Yeah.
like 1,200 above.
Can I say something potentially controversial too?
Yeah.
If you go to a game and you play okay, win the game, if you go to that Western Supermare game, three, you're one of the 3,390, win the game, but we don't blow them away, or that Havant game where we don't blow them away, and everyone around you says that you're rubbish, even though you're sat there thinking, well, we've won that. Because everyone else has been horrible and negative. And get it forward, Cooper. Get it forward. Do you want to go back? No, probably not. Did you keep wanting to go back if the bloke behind you sat the whole time moaning? No. So I think a part of it, certainly not going to be the part of it, a part of it is going to be the fact that we spend the whole time bloody moaning at Kiewicz Park.
I do have to say that on Saturday, it crossed my mind there were on a couple of occasions where the ball did get passed sideways and backwards, where I
That's
thought to
fine.
myself, no, let me finish.
Sorry.
That I thought to myself, if this was Hewish Park, I wonder what the reaction to that would be.
That's
And like I
interesting.
say, it was a relatively small but fervent, in as much as you can be fervent, stood on a crumbling piece of concrete in front of a scrapyard, on an open terrace. Away end. Yeah, and I did think to myself on a couple of occasions, I wonder what the reaction to that would have been at Hewish Park. So yeah, it shows the value of the support. And I noticed that both our post-match interviews both mentioned the supporters. So I do think that there is something to be said for that. And Torquay is and I think Weymouth will obviously be a big crowd as well, big away following. Feels like we as fans have a very big part to play because Torquay are going to be
They
they got
I
a
mean, this
lot
is,
to play for.
yeah, their team talk is easy. Party poopers.
Yeah.
Get us out of our trouble and party poop their party in the process. Absolutely. I know that's Thursday's podcast and we'll get maybe stuck into that, but you are absolutely right. I do just think it needs to be a better environment from everybody to get those numbers back to the fours and fives. Look, I'm okay with 3.5. We're in the National League South. Like, this is okay. This is great. We're still the highest again. Will we be second or third? Braintree was second or third highest in the National League South again.
There was what, like 1,200 there on Saturday? Was it 1,200?
Yeah, and that was
Yeah.
the second or third highest in the division for
Yeah.
non-league day.
And their fans were going, as we were walking out, it's like, oh, it's amazing. So many people. It's amazing. It's like, well, I hope they're gonna, some of them come back. And that shows you that's a team that's third in the division who's just won 14 games. And I mean, yeah. So we've been a Football League club for 15 years. So we should be getting bigger crowds than anybody. Us and Torquay should be the two teams that get bigger crowds than
Oh,
anybody.
wow.
But we are.
I'm just looking at the average attendances here. Absolutely, we are just miles above. The average attendance doesn't actually attach to a number. Anyone want to guess what Avely's average attendance is this year?
Under 400.
400. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. 14 teams over half the division in triple digits that average below 1,000.
Did you lose Ben when he was about to say what the average
was? I don't know if it was just me.
We didn't hear it.
Sorry. I was pointing out that there isn't a league average. There's a red line on this graph I've got in front of me, but it doesn't actually tell me what the red line is significant of, which is not helpful.
Well, if you look, it's close to 1,135, isn't it? Western Supermare. When you look at Western, that red line is about the Western one. This doesn't make great podcasting, great audio, but yeah, it would look to me around 1,100 is the average.
Yeah. And let's not get too carried away with ourselves, because there are some of these teams who are, they are small teams, Avely, for crying out loud. And they are small teams who are surrounded by much bigger teams. You look at Havant is one. Obviously, they've got Portsmouth, Southampton around them. Western have got the Bristol clubs around them. So, I think ourselves and Torquay, and obviously there's been plenty of reasons not to go to Torquay this season, should be far and away the biggest gates that you get there, and that seems to be proven.
However, we announced a while ago, didn't we, that 3,000 tickets had sold for Torquay. Can only imagine that's going to go up over the course of the next few days and weeks as parents suddenly figure out, oh my God, the kids are off school on Easter, on Good Friday. What are we going to do with them? Take them down to Hewish Park.
Get them to Yeovil.
Get them to Yeovil.
Last one. Hewish. Favourite Easter egg? And no, just vaguely answering chocolate ones.
Knows us too well, does that good man. I have a nostalgic one. Every Easter I used to get the Snickers one that had the wrapping that made it look like a football. And that was always my favourite one to get. Always. Just had a couple of Snickers bar next to it. And an egg. Lovely.
Easter eggs are just the same. And it's only whatever other chocolate that comes with the Easter egg that really differentiates that for me. And I'm a big fan of a packet of Maltesers and a full-size packet of Maltesers inside a Maltesers Easter egg and then one in the box as well. That does it for me.
What about a rabbit? The Malteser bunny?
I'm quite happy with a bunny.
Can we have a word on the Malteser that comes in the celebrations box?
Yes, the teaser.
Because it's not a Malteser, is it?
No, it's the teaser. Because it's like chocolate with a bit of honeycomb in it.
Just give us the Malteser. Better.
Okay. So my favourite egg, I'm going to go with... I think I'm with you, Dave. Malteser. I'm more of a fan of the Malteser bunny. I've been eating a lot of orange mini eggs. Have you seen the new orange mini eggs?
Sensational. Have you tried the Kinder Bueno mini eggs?
No.
Different gravy.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm a big fan of the little sort of Eastery bits you get rather than just a chocolate egg, because it's just, if you get a Cadbury's egg, it's just dairy milk in the shape of an egg, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you pro or anti mug in the gift set?
I don't need any more mugs.
Don't need any more mugs in the house.
Too much space where chocolate could be put in, I think.
Dad, if you're listening, do not get my kids, your grandchildren, Easter eggs with mugs. It's just not happening. Don't do it.
They're going straight to the charity shop.
Correct.
The mugs.
Yeah.
There we go. That's the questions.
Okay. So
that's your lot.
Nine more points. Are we getting excited? Are we ready to believe? It's going to be easy. It's going to be fun.
I've been singing And Now You're Going to Believe Us since Dorchester in pre-season, Ben. So
you have. It's hard to disagree with you. Yeah.
Dave, are you there yet?
You know, I was there with about 1 minute. I was there with about 1 minute of extra time, injury time to go on Saturday. And then Chelsea scored twice. And I went, goes to show was too much hope. Too much hope can kill you.
Right, Dave.
On to Friday, all Dartford, aren't we?
And with a quick turn, the skipper Alex Dock slams it in.
There's Lindegaard making Forrest back pedal. Davis looking to help it into the path of Morris. He's found him via the deflection. It's Aaron Davis. He could win it. He probably has won it for Yeovil.
Stansfield, good turn away from Trump.